Joining us today on Robin Hood Radio is our state representative, Maria Horn, who has been very active and busy, especially the past couple of weeks, 3 weeks, between tornadoes, severe thunderstorms, and tropical storms going throughout our tri-state region. Maria, nice to catch you at home for just a quiet moment anyways.
Thanks, Marshall. It's always nice to talk to you. I'm glad we connected.
Yeah. Okay. So, what's go to first of all, Eversource, and of course, Eversource had two strikes against them, and the state had some meetings. Fill us in on what the deal is, and what you might expect from Eversource.
Sure. So, yes, as you suggest, the path was, you know, when Eversource cranked up its rates and our bills, everyone saw their bills go up dramatically in July, you know, at a time when so many are struggling to reckon with this pandemic, both economically and from a health perspective, that shocked a lot of people, including the legislators, that Eversource would choose to do this right now. So hearings were set up immediately. We put a lot of pressure on their regulatory body, which is known as PURA, which stands for the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, which rescinded that rate increase and pending hearings, which were scheduled. The first of those hearings took place a week ago today, which was focused on that rate increase that Eversource included in our bills in July. Of course, in the immediate aftermath of scheduling that, as you suggest, we had Tropical Storm Isaias, and it was, you know, at a time when Eversource was saying, well, you know, our rates are going up, but our service is really great, and we all experienced that's not really the case, and the huge disconnect between what Eversource sees as its own success, as is evident by, you know, very large executive compensation packages, among other things, and the way we might define, we as ratepayers would define success. And that kicked off in addition to the PURA hearing, legislative hearings that also began last week, which focused on the really lack of or very poor response by Eversource towards ratepayers in the wake of the storm. And so in that hearing, for the first time, the Eversource executives and United Illuminating and the various regulatory bodies all showed a very long hearing. I watched almost all of it, although I'm not on that committee. This is very complex area of law, and it requires a lot of attention to make sure that we can pay, you know, absolutely follow through. Eversource has a lot of lobbyists, and they use the complexity, I think, to hide the ball. And so it's going to take a lot of sustained attention on the part of lawmakers and the regulatory authority to make sure that we change the model here.
So it's just really just keep knocking on the door until it actually opens up. It's just keeping pressure on is what the basic answer is.
I think it is keeping pressure on, but I think to be really simplistic, there are sort of two fronts here. One is, in the immediate, how do we address the immediate issues, which is to say, you know, putting pressure on Eversource to make some sort of good faith effort to compensate ratepayers for the significant costs that they incurred in the wake of this storm, and also, you know, to not crank up their rates at a time when we're all struggling anyway. So I think that's an immediate thing that we can, but, you know, a lot of that is accomplished by putting pressure on them through the Attorney General's office, through the regulatory body, and through the legislature. And then I think there's the longer term picture, which focuses on, you've heard, you know, Senator Blumenthal talked about, you know, throwing out the entire model and forming a true, you know, state utility. Lamont has also questioned the current model just rewards Eversource for every capital outlay they make, basically, and to shift that instead towards a model in which they are rewarded for success, which we define, we the ratepayers. I mean, they have a captive income stream from us, and we, as you know, as a result of that, we should have more authority over defining what success looks like in terms of service towards ratepayers.
And especially since Eversource really has, I think we pay the highest, I think, rate per capita in the country.
We do.
That makes it even worse. I want to move on from Eversource. A new story this morning broke that Connecticut, the rainy day fund is, I think, a little over $3 billion now. And obviously, it's not allowed to go much higher than that. So is that something that's going to come up with a special session or a session about using some of that money to obviously defray some of the money that's being expended during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we in Connecticut ought to be really proud of having that robust balance of a rainy day fund. And it was not easy. I mean, we had to fight to make sure that was saved for the actual rainy day that has, you know, befallen us. So, you know, that doesn't happen without a lot of work and a lot of fight. So what's great is that it is exceeding $3 billion. And as you suggest, once it exceeds that a number around $3 billion, it automatically, anything over that automatically starts to go towards repayment of debt. Which is healthy also. But then we also have that pretty robust, $3 billion balance, which puts us in the top, I believe, the top 10 states in the country in terms of percentage of its relationship to our overall budget. It gives us cushion at a time when we know we're going to be facing some hardship. We have done, so far, Connecticut has done pretty well from a budgetary perspective, but some of that is because of timing issues. Some money came in sooner than we expected, and we still have very difficult budgets ahead. So that rainy day fund cushions us for fiscal 2020, and looks like it'll provide some cushion for 21, but we're going to have to, you know, it won't last all the way through 21.
And is the governor going to call you back in for a special session?
I think we have different messages all the time about when we're going to get called into special session. And the governor can call us into special session, and we can also call ourselves into special session. So, this is one of those circumstances. There is so much, you know, pain and fear and anxiety in all of us right now. And you can see it in all kinds of issues, you know, racial issues, as well as economic issues, as well as public health issues. As you can imagine, with 151 legislators, each one of them feels a little differently about what is urgent. So there's a lot of question about what, you know, the special session should be. It is not a normal session. You can't do all the hearings that you usually do in a regular session. And although those hearings are messy and they slow the process down, they're also valuable. And so we have to craft an appropriate balance, I think, between the things that absolutely need to happen immediately and the things that we're capable of doing immediately. We do have serious budgetary constraints that we have to keep in mind. So there's a lot of wrestling going on about what's actually going to be on the agenda for September, and I'm afraid I don't have much clarity on that. One thing I do have clarity on, which I will add, I have had a conversation about, there are a number of the governor's executive orders, for example, relating to, you know, giving municipalities the ability to conduct meetings online, which have been really helpful to local leaders. Also sector rules for businesses, you know, lots of clarity for municipal leaders in particular, and they very much want those extended. And it's my understanding that the governor will extend those with or without legislative action.
All right. And one final thing I want to tell people about that I noticed the other day, and that was your live meeting with the Attorney General, which I actually started a watch party, and about 20 to 25 people were in on it. Those meetings are really for people that want to stay informed, really explain a lot about the Office of Attorney General and how the legislature works with the Attorney General.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one in particular. I'm hoping I get a chance to. I can lure him in for some more of those in the future, because it is really valuable. And I think a lot of people don't understand what the Attorney General's office in particular does. It is a very powerful tool for consumers. They do a lot of consumer-focused work, and they have a lot of authority, as we discussed, beyond the just investigative and legal action. Just bringing the power of the Attorney General's office in terms of asking questions and bringing people to the table is really valuable. Awesome.
Well, keep up the good work, Maria. I'm glad we could check in and get this update from you, and we'll check in again with you in a couple of weeks, see how the state is faring through our weird end of summer into fall.
It is a weird season. Thank you, Marshall, for all you do. You are such a valuable community resource, so always glad to talk to you.